Okay, I'm ready. If you could say today's date and all that for the record as well.
Okay, and just for Zoom functionality, I'm going to suggest that if you aren't speaking directly, you can so we don't have too much background noise. December 10th, Planning Commission meeting, the commissioners present are me, Matthew Cochran, Vice Chair. I'll be running it today. He's Cookie Schaus, Josie Muse, Curtis Oberhansley is the zoning administrator, Peg is the clerk, and Michaela as, what is Michaela's title? The deputy zoning administrator. And Peg, will you tell me when Haley comes on as well?
She's
going to show up.
She's coming in right now, Matt. I just admitted her.
I see. Thank you. So we'll start today with, I'm looking at the agenda. We can approve the agenda. So if someone would make a motion to approve the agenda.
I make a motion to approve the agenda. Cookie Schaus.
I second the motion.
Okay, all in favor? Let's just do roll call votes. Matt Cochran, aye.
Haley Apperson, aye.
Cookie Schaus, aye.
Josie Muse, aye.
Okay, and then next would be a motion to approve the November minutes from the last PC meeting.
I make a motion to approve the November 12 minutes, unless anyone have comments.
I second it. Haley Appleton. Aye. Cookie Schaus, aye.
Josie Muse, aye.
Maybe we should go alphabetically. Just kidding. Okay. So that's the basic business taken care of here. And next, I want to go over to, let's see. We're going to continue with the review of the development standards with Lee Nellis here. And let's see, Lee, you have another example we're going to run through.
Mm-hmm.
And let's take it from there. Then if we're by 7 o'clock, I want to be on to the public hearing and so on. So let's try and work within that time frame.
We can do that.
Perfect.
Great. Okay. It seemed to me that it worked quite well the last time we did this to go through the proposed commercial standards with an example of something that at least conceivably might happen in Boulder. And we did just a little further on up the highway a local agricultural processing and retail outlet last time. This time we're going to do something a Buddhist retreat and spa tucked away near the trees along the creek, just south again of Utah 12, just before the curve as you're heading west out of town. So this is a 4,000 square foot studio building that includes a kitchen, a library, a small retail counter, mainly studio space. It has a loading area behind it along with two sets of employee housing to provide some affordable employee housing for the project. It also then has four guest cabins, one of which is right up against the parking lot to provide for people who need to overcome mobility limitations. The other three are by a Zen garden backed up against the trees there along the creek. And there is a fairly long access road that goes into sort of all this from Utah 12, and then there is the base of a sign, a 4x8 foot sign that would guide people into the facility. So that is, and the maximum number of guests for each cabin would be 8, So that would be 32 guests. The maximum number of people in each employee housing unit would be 4. So that would be a potential of 8 employees living on the site. That's the details that I put in to give us enough to talk about. There are a few things that we would have to know if we were doing this for real, doing minor things. But that's the project. If anybody has any questions about the project, before we get started, we'll start running through the review list. Everybody clear on what we're talking about?
Yep.
Okay. This is a commercial one, right?
This is commercial. Everything we're doing is commercial. Just writing commercial standards at this point in time. So, based on our conversation about a month ago, there is now a very plain and explicit standard that says that commercial development has to have direct access to Utah 12, which this does, and since that's an absolute requirement, we would probably find that this complies with that. The second, which is also an absolute standard, says that there will be no commercial development in the Mesa Crops Hillsides overlay. This isn't in that overlay, so it's not relevant. The second one, this is by the creek, and so this is definitely of interest, is that there's a requirement for buffers along all water courses, which are either the entire riparian area or that's not feasible 50 feet. In this case, since I like to have positive examples instead of negative, I did not tear into the riparian vegetation and kept everything outside that water course buffer. So I'm going to say that I think this would be a project that complies, but I want to point out to you how easy it would be for someone who's doing a project like this to say, oh, I'd like to have the cabins back in the trees, closer to the creek, right? Or even the main building itself, although this is a somewhat large building and parking lot. So what we're getting here from the way this standard works is a lot of protection for that creek corridor. And someone who had backed the cabins into the trees or the parking and main building, some portion of this would find themselves not complying with an absolute standard. So there we go. Crossings, this is put in there in case people have to cross a stream corridor or a slope. And they don't ask for a crossing, so it's not relevant. Now, 2E is one where there's always going to be a bit of discretion for planning commission to work with. It's one that encourages people to take the best advantage of the views and natural features on a site. And you can either gain or lose points for this. And I guess the question here is whether you think this creates a problem in terms of the resources that are there or whether they did a pretty good job of blending in. This is not a highly visible piece of land from the road or from other places. And so with the trees there and everything, it's really nicely tucked away. And I guess if I were on the Planning Commission, I would say, hey, maybe they deserve some positive credit for having what's a fairly big development for Boulder, but is out of sight. But, you know, it's up to you guys to think that through and say what you would do. So if there's opinions about how it fits with this particular standard, let's talk about them.
So, Lee, a couple questions. One is, as an aside, you said that you're going to work on the reducing some of the landscaping language. Mm-hmm. In there.
You're going to see that as we go through.
Okay, great. And then how would you say, like, I'm curious, like, why would you give something plus one versus a plus two?
Well, I think that, and we talked about this a little, so I'll go back to my way of thinking about this. My way of thinking about positive scores is, did they invest something in doing this? Either money or thought, right? In this case, I would say they invested some thought. The buildings are going to be minimally visible from anywhere else in Boulder, right? and they did not trespass on the riparian buffer. So I guess what I would say is that while the cost of this, in terms of financial investments, might be about the same, wherever you put it, they did invest a lot of design thought into this, making it right. And also the other thing that you could look at as an investment is that they're building quite a long driveway to get back to this place that's tucked out of view. Had they put this up right on the road where everyone could see it, I think we'd probably all have a different take on it. So I guess that I'm saying that they've invested something here in terms of their design process, and I don't think it's stretching it too far to say that that long driveway makes this a better project.
Right.
So you're looking at what did they do to make this a project that blends into the landscape? And in this case, I think they did something.
Okay, so if I go with design thought and investment of driveway, I'd give them a plus two. What about the other commissioners?
Yeah, I think I agree. I really like the way it's tucked down. I don't know whether everything is 25 feet. All the structures are 25 feet from Boulder Creek, especially the studio, but maybe that's under a different category that we'll look at. But we did skip a moderate slope, and is that because it is not an absolute relative?
Well, no, it's because there's not a moderate slope here.
Well, coming down from Highway 12, well, I guess it's just the driveway is the moderate slope, huh?
Right, and I don't know that that slope is 15%.
Yeah, it probably isn't.
So,
okay, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's okay. We need to be thorough. I think that moderate slopes ended up as an irrelevant one in this particular case.
Okay.
And the studio, as I measured it from the creek, it's hard to see the channel of the creek and the trees on this aerial, but I have it being over 100 feet from the creek channel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's quite some distance from the main channel. I mean, if Boulder Creek kind of braids out in places, it's quite some distance from the main channel of the creek.
Okay, I'm good with a plus two.
Other thoughts?
Haley or Josie, what do you think?
I think a plus two is appropriate.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay, let's go with that one.
Alrighty, we're good. Retaining vegetation is a relative policy on which you can lose points for cutting into existing significant trees, which they did not do in this case. They can't gain points that way. This is back to Matt's question about how I reduced the values you could get for landscaping. And I did that pretty comprehensively through the whole thing. Because when we ran that project through before, they got oodles of points, right? And so in this case, they would just end up with a zero for not affecting those existing significant trees. And there's a protecting vegetation. That's protecting it during construction. And one of the things that I would want if I were the planning commission, in this case, given how close the buildings come to some of the trees, is I would want to have the site taped and marked so that heavy equipment did not get off into the trees as it's going in there to set the foundations. So that would be a condition, I think, that you would use this absolute number 3B there. You'd use that to enforce a condition there. I think put a condition there in the supplies box and be good with that. Stop me if there's any questions. I'm going to go through the next couple here pretty quick because they are so simple. Stormwater management, they have to comply with the state law one way or the other, so you would simply be asking for evidence that that was true. Utilities, they have to do whatever is required in Chapter 10, which is basically to say, make a deal with the water company to provide domestic water. And so that, again, would be a condition of approval. Access to Highway 12, they would have to comply with whatever UDOT wants in terms of how that driveway hooks onto Highway 12. So that's another condition of approval. Access to other roads is irrelevant because Highway 12 is the other only road they're seeking access to. So we run through all of that quite quickly. And presumably, if this was a well-prepared application, you guys would see information from the state and from the water company about how they were going to deal with this proposed project. 4C, we've done 4D, utilities underground. You could gain points here, but not lose any. And I didn't think about this one when I was setting up the example, so I think we could say that they probably are going to string the utilities down their overhead like most everything else and would not gain any points, but they wouldn't lose any either. So I have zero there. Dimensional standards, the setbacks, this is several hundred feet from property lines and the road. So it meets all of your setbacks really easily. And so I think that would be technically complies there. The maximum number of parking for places in the low density doesn't apply because this is in the GMU. GMU, you can have up to 50 spaces. They have 32. And so they would comply with that. And then parking for a dwelling, and we have a provision written in there so that if there's a dwelling on the parcel or already proposed on a parcel, the parking for the dwelling doesn't count against the commercial. And since there's no dwelling proposed here, that one's not relevant. Land use intensity. The question here, broadly, is, again, we asked in our relative policy up there about natural features, does it blend into the landscape? This is the opportunity for the Planning Commission to say, does this fit, is this compatible with the developments around it, with the homes or businesses or whatever else, built environment around it? Is it compatible with that? Is it overusing the land in terms of size of buildings or number of buildings compared to those other projects, or does this blend in pretty well? And that's really a matter, when it comes right down to it, of your judgment. So you guys can tell me what you think.
In this particular case, how do we know how tall that studio building is? If it has a peaked roof or a flat roof, or at this point, do we get to know that?
Well, you would. I did not bring in a drawing of the building, so we're going to have to make this up as we go. But
okay.
I think we can just say that it's a single-story building and leave it at that in terms of this compatibility question. So that's, I think the question, you know, height is a good thing to bring up, and you know, lot coverage, the intensity, there's different ways to measure the intensity of a project. You know, in terms of urban development, this is not a very intense project, right? But in Boulder, we're not talking about urban realities, so I think you get back to whether something that has 32 parking spaces, a fairly big building, that's a huge, really good building, and some, you know, ancillary buildings. Does that make sense in this particular location in Boulder? Is it compatible?
The main building is how many square feet?
4,000 square feet.
So what is that?
What did I make it? I'm trying to remember. It's like, oof, 60 by whatever adds up to 4,000 square feet. It's 60 feet length.
Okay.
So then, yeah. And then those cabins, as you can see, those are about 800 square feet apiece, the way I drew them. So
yeah,
there's there's six 800 square foot cabins, the two employee ones and the four guest ones.
So it's roughly about 60 by 60, a little larger at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, not much. And then the 800 square foot building. So you got 4,000 square feet there, and then six times eight. You've got another 4,800 square feet of coverage, so the total coverage on the side is 8,800 square feet, give or take, in terms of building coverage.
Okay. And I just out of curiosity, I mean, it doesn't look to me like the outline for the 4,000 square foot building is quite to scale.
It probably isn't quite to scale. It's supposed to be at least close.
Okay.
It's the drawing tools that I have. This isn't a drafting program. This is just a little sketching program that I use. So
yeah,
precision is not the not necessarily there, but it may be a little bigger here as it's shown than it actually would be at 4,000 square feet.
Well, I suppose I'd say just off the cuff that it's sort of a neutral land intensity. I don't know, whatever our numbers are. I might give it a minus one. But that's just one commissioner. What does everyone else think?
Well, I don't know if this is any of our business or not, but if they made that building look like a barn, I would say they could do better than a minus one, but I would either go for a zero or a minus one.
Okay. Anybody else want to chip in?
Materials would be important.
Yeah, they would be.
I would go with the minus one. I see that land use intensity is a different category than design of the buildings.
Mm-hmm. It is.
So I wouldn't take that into consideration here, but the length of the driveway, the parking lot size, the building size compared to ag fields and the existing structures that are there, the barn and such, I think a negative one would fit.
Okay. This is why we do it this way, so that we can take all those different things into consideration. We're doing well there.
I walked away for a minute, you guys, so I don't actually know what we're giving the score to at the moment.
Okay.
We're talking about the building itself, correct?
Well, the buildings, actually, in this case.
The buildings and
the pavement.
Size, and, okay.
Yeah, the pavement has to be included in thinking about intensity. This is more pavement than you see in most places in Boulder.
Yeah, so Haley, this is 6D. We're talking about the land use intensity in this entire project.
Oh, okay.
And whether it's compatible with what surrounds it or not.
I missed the picture of the map again. If I really wanted to chime in.
Right, right.
Here, sorry, you guys.
There's Matt. Okay. Cool. So when you use the word compatible with the land use density,
mm-hmm.
So the compatibility doesn't mean, like Josie pointed out, doesn't mean how it actually fits with the land around it. It's just the size of the building.
Well, it doesn't. The materials, what Josie was pointing out, and which is true, is that we'll look at materials of the building, the actual architectural details, the type of materials, in a different standard. So this standard is about, fundamentally, it's about lot coverage, how much of this lot is is covered by pavement and buildings, and about the intensity of the use, and you can look at the intensity of the use and say, well, you know, if you have 32 guests and 8 employees, then at a given time, you might anticipate there being 40 people on this property. You take things like that into consideration when you talk about intensity, and we do have, people may or may not have noted it, but I added into the ordinance the definition of compatible. And what that definition says is compatible does not mean identical or even nearly the same. Two things are compatible means that they are able to exist together without conflict, they are reconcilable. Okay? So
that's what I was trying to remember.
Yeah. Thinking about, you know, is this in conflict with what surrounds it? The intensity of this in conflict with what surrounds it.
I think what also made me more inclined to give it a -1 is the fact that there would, you know, there's a loading zone area. There's going to be trucks maybe coming in and out, and it's just going to be more intense than maybe some of the surrounding use. I don't know. Anyway, I feel good about it.
So a -1 is saying that it's not fully compatible with the intensity of their, and certainly no one can argue that this is not more intense than what is immediately around, right?
Right.
Correct.
That's not a hard conclusion to reach. And so I think we're doing well here with the -1, and in order to keep the time here, working, I would like to move on if we can.
I have one quick question.
Sure.
Up on 6B, you have a 15/50. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering what that means. I know that we have a 50 maximum, but...
Well, the 15 needs to come off of there, because at one time this was written to say that if you didn't have direct access to Utah 12, you could only have 15 spaces.
Gotcha.
And when I made the other changes, I forgot to remove that 15. But in the final version of this, the 15 comes off, and it's
okay. Okay, thanks. Yep.
Okay. Outdoor spaces setback. Again, there is an outdoor space. They have their Zen garden. That's an active space that's associated with the project. It is vastly farther away from property lines than what your ordinance requires, so... is going to comply with the setbacks in Table 2 for sure. Buffering and screening, now this is an interesting one. This used to be 5 points, and now I've reduced it to 3. And the question is, you know, they have all this natural buffering. I don't think that you are obliged to give them points for taking advantage of nature, or you did give them some points for doing that up under 2E. And they haven't really added, they've added 4 trees in terms of landscaping here. You can see those 4 trees. 2 of them are internal to the parking lot, and 2 of them are on the north edge. Had they been in a different situation or a different place without the native vegetation there, they might have needed to do some buffering and screening. Given where it is now, I guess the question you would have to ask yourself is would they need to run some type of buffering or screening down the east edge of the building in the parking lot? That's the only place where it would be even arguably affecting any other landowner, and honestly, it's a long ways to the next other home or structure, right? So I guess under other circumstances that we'd be talking about that for sure. I don't know whether it's that big a deal given where this sits right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'd simply say if they wanted points on that, then I'd make it a condition to line some of that eastern side for both noise,
right,
light, and visual screening.
Right, we'll see. And now you're getting into the spirit of how this works, which is that you can say, hey, look, if you need points, here's something you can do, right? This is the spirit of how this system works. So at this point in time, I'm going to give it a 0 and move on. Outdoor spills or spaces conflicting with parking, not a not a problem here. So that one's going to be compliant. That's an absolute, so it complies. Conflict. Parking and traffic. Now, here's one of the most interesting policies in the whole system, and we've talked about it a lot in the context of other parts of Boulder. This is your opportunity to say, hey, this will create either traffic or parking congestion somewhere. I guess my initial reaction is probably it doesn't. But obviously you guys have to think that through and say, okay, do we think that this is going to affect anybody else's access? That would be one question. And then do we think this is going to affect, really, since the only public road that's involved is the highway, we think this is going to add more traffic to the highway than it can accommodate. So does this comply then?
It'll definitely increase traffic.
But anything you do is going to increase traffic,
right.
Whether that's a problem.
I'm just looking, that's an absolute, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm thinking with the long driveway and the ample parking spaces that it's reasonable and that they meet the absolute.
Mm-hmm.
I think if there was parking and congestion, I would think that if it was the parking lot was abutting the Highway 12,
mm-hmm.
and that could be a congestion problem.
No, it's a different question. I agree with you that you would have to look at this a little differently with more direct access to the highway. But at this point in time, they're pretty much out of everybody's way.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I mean, in UDOT's, you know, at least imaginatively cleared the access view and
right.
all that sort of stuff when it occurred.
Right.
Yeah. I'm good.
Okay. And then something we added that isn't going to be relevant in this particular instance, but 9B, we added it in one of our last two discussions to say, hey, the Planning Commission could always say you have a parking problem or a traffic problem. Here's what you could do to mitigate it. Are you willing to do some mitigation at your expense, of course? And we don't, I think, see them having to mitigate here, but you have that ability written very explicitly in print. Off-street parking, Table 3 for a use like this is going to require four spaces per 1,000 square feet. And so for 4,000, that'd be 16 spaces. With the 32, you've got parking for the cabins and the employee housing, and you're about right with Table 3 there. And then while I didn't highlight it in yellow, if you go on to 10B, we also talked about providing excessive parking and that you would have the ability to say, hey, no, this is, you've paved too much, you've paved more than Table 3 requires. For instance, if these guys come to you with 50 spaces, you would have the opportunity to say, hey, that's too much pavement. If we look at Table 3, it only requires, 16 and 16, 32. So, if you stick within the table, that's what they're required to do. You can't say they have too much parking then, but if they come in with 45 or 50 spaces, I think you'd be justified in saying no shrink that. So, you have a good power here.
Yeah.
And then RV parking, I did not put an RV parking space in here, although that parking lot is laid out, it's just a big block, you can easily do it. But your existing ordinance has always said that you're supposed to provide some RV parking spaces as well as regular. So this is just picking up what's in chapter, what was in chapter 10. So we get to the bottom of the first page, and we don't have any policies, absolute policies, with which it fails to comply. And point-wise, we gave it positive 6 on 2E, and we gave it a minus 3 on 6D. So we are at a positive 3 points at this point in the process, and you can roll on to the next page here. Okay, so in D, you can't have your outdoor or your parking in the front setback, and this obviously does not, so it complies. That's a requirement that exists in the existing code. There's a limit on how much of your road frontage can be in parking. As a relative policy, there is no parking on the road frontage here, so and the way it's written right now, you'd give them positive points if you wanted to for keeping their parking away from the road. And that might be worth thinking about. Right? Because if this 32-unit, and I think Josie said this or somebody, 32 units of parking up on the street is a different situation than 32 units of parking hidden down here. So are you inclined to say that you would reward that?
I suppose I'm not feeling very generous, but I'll give him a little.
Well, let's put a positive one there and see what it does to everything, okay? And because I can see, I mean, one of the reasons we're doing this is so we can go back and talk about how these things work. Buffering and screening in the parking, this parking is going to be essentially invisible. Anyone except someone up in that pasture over to the east. But they didn't do any buffering or screening, right? They're using the natural vegetation. So I'm going to say I would not be inclined to give them positive points here. I'd leave them at a 0 and move on. They've basically taken advantage of what nature gave them.
Yeah, I would too, because, you know, the one thing about cars is they have a lot of reflective surfaces, so those houses to the east would definitely get a glare if they didn't put some buffering in on that side.
Right. Well, and that's another thing you could do here, but I don't know that I would give them negative points at this point either.
Yeah. Well, the other thing to consider too in that is lights on cars at night.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that, you know, if there was a house any closer, I mean, we're several hundred feet away. But if you had homes that were nearby here, then I think asking for a screen of some type that would block the headlights would be a totally reasonable thing to ask for.
Right. Well, we want to make Bren and happy.
So, internal landscaping, they put 2 trees in the parking lot, so that's some internal landscaping. I don't know if I would give them positive points for 2 trees or not, but they did do something. I guess I'm probably not inclined to give them positive points, but I wouldn't take anything away either, obviously.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that's a big investment. So I'd
right. And then we get down to 11, which is one of the more interesting ones, and it applies to this. Building access, we said that buildings should be perpendicular, not parallel to the highway. But this building will only be fairly visible. It won't have a visual impact for travelers on the highway. So even though it's long axis to parallel, I don't know that I would take points away here. I certainly wouldn't give them any points either, though, because it doesn't really... I mean, essentially, the policy isn't very applicable because they're, 400 feet, between 400 and 500 feet off the highway. So...
And it's almost a square building, to be honest.
It is awfully close to square. I mean, I do these things simple here. So, 0 points there. And then we get into a string of things that we can go through quite quickly. They don't have to have a discharge permit, so they would have... they would comply with that. They don't have much potential channel runoff onto other properties, and they'll say they comply with that. Not going to need an air quality permit. Unlikely to have hazardous materials. Now, we'd want to look, and of course, we don't have any details of this, but if they had lighting in the parking lot or something, you'd have to see that and decide whether it complies or not, right? There's going to be some outdoor lighting for paths, like for people to get back to the cabins and stuff. So if we were doing this big time, we would we want to see a lighting plan. And you might have something to say about it here under outdoor lighting, or conceivably under light trespass, although again, they're a long ways away from other uses. Dust and smoke, not likely. Heat and glare, not likely. Noise, not very likely, and it's not very close to anybody anyway. Noxious weeds, you'd have to see if there are noxious weeds there and whether they have a mitigation for that. That's state law. And then solid waste, one of the things this doesn't do is show you where the dumpster is. Presumably it's back there in the loading area. So that's something you'd have to have a condition on. And then 13B is buffering and screening the dumpster or whatever other type of trash, you know, receptacle they have. In this case, we don't have any information on that. But you could give them minus points if you thought it was going to be visible. It's not going to be visible for anywhere on this property. It's going to be buffered by the trees, by the building itself. But you would at least have that power. 13C is about disposable food containers, which technically would apply here because they serve food. Right? So you would have to say, hey, you're not gonna send people away with disposable food containers that would result in litter. And that would be a condition of approval. Signs, they have a pretty modest 4x8 sign up the road. And I think that would comply with what's in your existing sign regulations.
Doesn't that add up to 32 square feet? And ours is, our ordinance, isn't it 4 square feet? Or what am I thinking of?
It's 4 square feet for home businesses.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But
you can have a larger sign than that for an actual commercial use.
Okay.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay, operating hours. Now, I don't know whether it's an issue with this thing or not. You'd have to talk to them about what they plan to do in terms of, like, evening classes or what. But you would have the power to say, hey, we know that you got residents on the property for classes and stuff, but your programs have to end at 9 or 10 or whatever. You would have power to regulate operating hours.
So, for example, like, your silent retreat has to end at 9 p.m.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, I guess any formal silence as opposed to informal silence end at 9 p.m. But again, if it appeared to you from their operating plan that they were going to be attracting larger numbers of people, you might want to have an operating hours condition. I think the goal here is to point out to you what you can do, if you need to. Item 16 is drive-in, drive-through. That's pretty much not relevant to this. Item 17, standardized commercial. McDonald's hasn't started doing yoga studios yet, so we're okay there. Accessory dwellings are permitted with commercial uses, and so they would comply there. And then you have, and this is an interesting one, employee housing. It's possible to get positive points for employee housing. And they have provided the opportunity for 8 people to live there. And those people, therefore, don't have to seek a rental in Boulder or, live in substandard housing in Boulder. They have a place to be, and I guess I would be inclined to reward that with some points.
Yeah, I think it's really important to encourage that. I'd probably give it a plus two.
Yeah, I would agree with Cookie. Definitely a positive.
Right. Okay. And then we get to item 19, and we don't have a picture of the building. And I should have spirit up some type of a building, I guess, but I was not thinking about that until I did this. But we would talk about reflective materials. We would talk about color. We would talk about building lines, which this is a big enough building, you might not want it to just be a box. We would talk about detached forms, which they've done. They do not have their lodging as part of the other building. If they put their housing and lodging in there, then that would be an 8,800 square foot building, right? Give or take. And so they probably earned some points on detached forms down there. And that's a lot of points because it's got an importance of four. And then there's landscaping. I really reduced the value of that, and they wouldn't get any points anyway because they haven't invested much in it. You could even ding them if you thought they needed landscape on the east side there. That would be a possibility. And then local value added, they're not really adding value to a local product or craft, so that would probably be a zero as well. Okay. So we've gotten down here. There's nothing that they've failed. And we had three positive points cumulative on the first page. Now we've come down to have 17 positive points on this page, primarily because of the detached forms standard. That's half of it. And so that's where we're at, is that this thing would be approved with some conditions, quite a few conditions. And the question then is, are the points that are awarded for some of these things a little too generous? I'm going to say that we still have a lot for landscaping. That detached form ones, maybe that's not as important as we had it before. So I would propose to you that we further shrink the possibilities of points on buffering and screening, although they could be important in other parts of the community. I don't want to shrink them too much. But we're basically counting landscaping twice there with 19E. And so I'm going to say we take 19E out of here altogether. And leave the buffering and screening standard above is the best way to reduce the overreach points for landscaping.
Lee, I one suggestion is there, I also feel it might be tipped a little heavy in the building design things. Mm-hmm. Or much, you know, is there a way to combine those into a
When we talked about these, we really focused a lot on talking about reflectivity. And so based on what I've heard from you guys, I wouldn't want to lower the importance of that one without some more discussion. Okay? Yeah. That one was important when we talked about it. The others, what I would say is with color building lines and detached forms, is I'd probably put those down to either ones or twos. And rather than taking them out of there, consolidating them, I would leave them to consider. But I wouldn't allow people to rack up huge numbers of points. But you also want people to be able to lose points, right, if they don't follow the building line thing or if they propose a godly fruitful thing. So there has to be some importance to it for the negative point part of this. But what I'm seeing here is, except for reflectivity, we drop them all to a one.
Yeah, I sort of like that. What do the commissioners think about that?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, me too.
I just get concerned that someone could focus all on landscaping, what their place looked like, and just pack in a lot of points at the detriment of other things.
Well, we've taken out the potential altogether with 19E there. We reduced it on the others before. I'm looking up here at buffering and screening of parking areas. I think that's pretty important. I don't know if I want to knock that down to, any further than a 3. What we could do, given that we're not talking about large parking areas anyways, we could just take 10G out of there and not have them have the possibility of getting points for internal landscape. Because you know that they would argue that they should get points for their 2 trees, right?
Right.
And so my thought about that is that we've got enough protection on parking lots with 10F. We just take 10G out of there, and that limits the potential, again, for giving them an overly large number of points on landscaping. And I'll point out that, you know, 3 of those points that they got for not having the frontage up on the highway, I feel like that's a really good policy. Rewarding them for being tucked away back here in the trees is a good thing to do.
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, me too.
So I feel like we're actually pretty close here with the changes that I'm suggesting to you. And the other one that I'll reduce the importance of landscaping on the outdoor sales areas. It wasn't relevant for this project anyway, but I'm going to nudge that one down a little bit just to prevent using trees to gain points when you may not have any other substance. So we'll roll that back even further than I did this time. And I guess my thought is I'll get these changes out to you. And I honestly think that it's time to take this out to a public hearing in January and see what the response is. And then if we need to fiddle with it some more after that, we can, but we've worked it through pretty thoroughly.
Okay, so thank you, Lee. We're winding down in time, so I want to sort of wrap this. And so for the commission, are you all ready to have this for a public hearing in January would be the a question, and then let's see where we're at with that.
Yeah, I would be anxious to have it in January, just to see what happens.
Oh, okay, like a good anxious.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's time. I think it feels pretty good.
All right.
And you know, good. I think it's good timing.
Yep, I agree. And thanks, Lee, for sending the documents you did earlier this month for review on the language. Right. And I think it's good to go.
Yeah.
Well, okay. And Lee, I have one question for you, Lee.
I have one question for you guys, too, so you ask me first.
Perfect. it looks like we will hold a hearing in January here. Would you be available for that? And is there a way to describe to the public what the development standards are in 5 or 10 minutes?
Well, that gets me back to my question for you. Is right exactly going right back up. Do you want to take an example? To spend 20 minutes before the hearing doing an example so people see how it works. I mean, I'm happy to do a 10-minute explanation. I can do that, no trouble, and I will. So my question to you is, do we need more than just an explanation? Do you want to actually take the people who are there through an example?
Anyone?
And you don't have to decide tonight. You can let me know later, right?
Okay. I think that's a good idea. I mean, I don't think it's a bad
idea.
I
do, too. Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
I think it would help answer a lot of questions up front.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, then we'll do that. So then I have one more question, and I know we're running short, but we've got a couple minutes. What type of project do you think I should make it or take into the public hearing? I mean, I obviously can come up with something. You guys don't have to do that, but if you have any thoughts about what would be realistic and helpful, then I would like to hear those. And again, I don't have to hear them right now. You guys can communicate with them later.
Well, I just want to answer that quickly. I think one of the examples we've already done would be quite good. I thought the the one we did last month was pointed out a lot of stuff for everyone. So, I don't know. That's my thought.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well. I think we could save a lot of time because we've already discussed it. So the presentation could be, you know, this is what how the Planning Commission rated this example.
Right. I might tinker with it a little bit just so that I bring in a couple of other standards that weren't touched on when we talked about it before. But okay, I can do that. I'll do the boulder beams, and we'll take that to the public.
Okay, thank you very much.
Really quick, yeah, go ahead, Haley.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I don't know if anybody saw the chat from Corla. Did anybody see that? Please have building height materials and all other building info available for sharing at the hearing. So.
Right.
Just note that people might want that information.
Yep. Okay. I will depart then, and you guys have a good meeting.
Okay. Over and out. Thank you, Lee.
Happy holidays to everybody.
Yeah. Thank you again.
You bet.
Thanks, Lee.
Okay. So... almost 7 o'clock, but we're going to start here next. So, switching gears from development standards, we're going to go into a public hearing. I'm getting feedback if some people want to mute. For the DW cell tower conditional use permit application. So, let's see, I'm going to, Curtis, are you on?
I'm here.
I'm going to let you do the introduction, if that's all right, unless you want me to cover it.
You can do it if you want. I've got some stuff prepared.
Okay. So, Curtis is going to introduce the CUP and the work he's been doing around this. Then we'll move on to a public hearing and go from there. So, thank you.
Okay, Peg, I'm going to try to screen share here, so we'll see how it goes. Can you see that?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
All right. So this is... this is the current antenna up on Thompson Ledge, and this is the control house. These are some miscellaneous poles, and these are the TV antennas. They don't receive anything, but they broadcast TV, UHF broadcast locally. So that's how some people in Boulder get their TV reception with an antenna as opposed to paying for a dish. So this is the free TV service that comes over the airwaves that is sponsored to the county. This tower's been here for several years. And the reason that I bring this up right now is because there was a concern. I've got a couple of queries whether or not the cell tower antenna on a new antenna would interfere with these, because these will go on the new antenna if you would approve the conditional use permit to replace this. So these would stay, they would go back up on the antenna. They're only 10 watt broadcast things, so they're low wattage, and they're a different type of a frequency, a different type of wave, not RF waves. So the cell tower, they wouldn't interfere with the cell antennas, nor would the cell antennas interfere with them. That's the information I've been given. DW Tower provided an engineering study on that course. So this is the location. The application is to replace this 60-foot tower with a 60-foot tower in its place. Our ordinance tops out at 50 feet. But since this is a non-conforming use, it's grandfathered in, it would be in your discretion to allow them to replace it and keep it at 60 feet. So new staff report, basically, it's in the GMU zone, so they're good there. It's compatible with the table of uses under public uses and utilities, and it's compatible with the general plan. The applicant has secured a long-term lease from the Peterson Ranch, the property owners, contingent upon whether or not they receive a conditional use permit. They're proposing the 60-foot tower. We already talked about that. This is within your... the existing tower is not structurally capable of handling cell provider antennas, and so it has to be replaced. We talked about the height limitation of 50 feet. The only reason that you would be considering 60 feet and exercising your discretion is because it's a non-complying structure, and it's within your power to replace it at that height. The applicant is providing the tower to will provide co-location opportunities for the providers, and that's part of our ordinance. That's way beyond our ordinance for you. If you provide those co-location opportunities, then you're meeting that portion of the ordinance. And then a coverage analysis was provided by an engineering service, and I'll follow that up in a minute. In fact, I can call it up right now. Looking at it, the coverage down in the middle of town, at the center of town, at the south central side, you can see the green here, the coverage. The coverage analysis up on Thompson Ledge, which is 188 feet higher, elevation 6888 versus 6700. And so they have calculated that the coverage area is 45% greater from on Thompson Ledge. The applicant has done some due diligence by looking at alternative sites. They first looked at the south central site, and they determined that having their microwave dish pointed directly at the school was making, it made some people nervous. They got some questions about that, so they started exploring other sites, and then they felt in terms of visual impact, in terms of people's concerns about RF, growing concerns about RF waves, and in coverage, where you get the better coverage, they determined that they were better off going up onto Thompson Ledge, and so that's when they started the negotiations with the Peterson Group. Here are the conditions that have been suggested. You could reject some, you could impose others. Within your discretion, all of these are discussed in the ordinance. So the maximum height would be 60 feet. They would bring fiber optics to the site so that you get apples to apples. There's fiber optics on the south central side, and you definitely want fiber optics to get maximum coverage. And the 45% or 40% better coverage was apples to apples, assuming fiber optics at both sides. You remove the existing tower and all of these poles. So this goes, these poles go, the site's cleaned up, and then one tower goes into it, goes in its place. This is your existing, and this is what the new tower. Now the existing still shown here, but the new lattice tower would be similar in visibility to the existing tower. You would reinstall the TV broadcast centers as we discussed. You'd offer other cell providers, including ComNet and FirstNet, the opportunity for co-location on the tower. You'd also offer other cell providers. You'd treat the metal structure of the project called Natina, and then you paint the antennas a rusty brown to diminish the visual impact. So Natina is a rust-colored natural product they use on the steel. They would repair and restore any damage to the access road up to Thompson's Ledge. They would then help maintain that road post-construction. They would install no lights on the tower at all or any exterior lighting at the facility. And then they would construct the tower in accordance with the plans and specifications. here are their plans and specifications. The existing tower, here's the block building we just showed you. Here's the existing tower. And then here's the new tower a few feet to the northwest. This is a fenced-in area, a gate where you pull a truck in, service it. And there's room for any carriers that come up to have their carrier boxes and their electronics, individual electronics. The fiber optics and the power comes up off of this side, off of the east side, and the fiber optics would be an overhead wire along with the power. This is a larger view of the area up on top of Thompson Ledge, for those of you that haven't been up there. And then here's the tower itself. This is just an opposite view. It's not two towers. It's one tower, and then these are just what the different kinds of antenna look like. And then this is the microwave dish taking a shot due east to Mount Pinnell, and then that Mount Pinnell takes a shot south to Bullfrog to give cell service down there to the residents, the school, and the visitors.
And so, Curtis, my understanding is that as a co-location tower, it offers three more spaces for other services to come in?
Yes, at least three. And then UHF TV antennas would be right here on top or there now. And so it offers three co-location opportunities at least, and then the dish. Now, whether there's room to, if they had an opportunity for four, I don't know.
ComNet, which is the emergency services thing, could use that space?
Absolutely. If they were so inclined, that would be made available to them. Both ComNet, as I understand it, and Ken and Dale can correct me, or I know Polly's on the call, she could too, but as I understand it, there's two different antennas here. There's a FirstNet antenna, which is a contract that ComNet has with AT&T. That's for first responders. And there's a ComNet antenna, which is a roaming service. And that's how we get our cell service. A lot of us get our cell service off that roaming antenna in town. Now, I may have gotten that all wrong, but there's plenty of people on this call that can correct me if I did. Any other questions, Matt?
I have none of the commissioners. Any other questions before we go to a public hearing?
I have a question. This is Cookie. I'm wondering, is there going to be, when they bring this new tower up to compliance, maybe with some new regulations, are there going to be any lights on top of it, like navigation to keep airplanes from running into it or anything, or will it be just as it is now?
No, it's not high enough to require aviation lights, and one of the conditions was that there be no lights, because those would really show up up there. So not only are they to install no lights on the tower, but no exterior lighting at the facility at all. So when they pull up there into that little building, you can have light inside the building. Not even know if it has windows in it. So you just keep this a dark facility pretty much. And it's 60 feet above that mesa, and you know some of the trees up there are probably 20 feet. So it doesn't require aviation lights. Hopefully nobody's going to be flying that low over there, especially in the dark.
Yeah. Thank you. I missed that item I. Sorry.
Okay, then. Last chance for questions. So, will someone make a motion to, we're going to move on to a public hearing, and we want to hear what everyone has to say. So, will someone make a motion to I guess, close the existing meeting and open up for the public hearing.
I'll make the motion to close this meeting and to open up for a public meeting.
I'll second that motion.
All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Haley Appleson, aye.
Christy Schaus, aye.
Josie News, aye.
Okay, so for the public, if you would raise your virtual hand or your real hand if you're on video, and then Michaela, I think, will we let you call out the comments?
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead, Tessa. Remember to unmute yourself.
Yes, Michaela. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
Great. Okay, I have some specific comments and questions about the application itself. But first, I guess I just wanted to say on a personal note that I think that Boulder is such a unique place in that it's a haven from cell towers and EMF waves, all these things that are so abundant in cities. And I think that's part of what makes this place really special. And so I understand that this is just a single tower, but I just don't want there to be a precedent of additional and more technological structures like this one that I believe take away from our health and the health of our natural surroundings and the beings around us. There are solid studies linking the health of pollinator species and bees, and especially, I mean, everywhere, but in a place like this where we're so reliant on those pollinators for everything we're growing and the wild plants do. I'm concerned about the species and also concerned about what this does for human health. So that's how I feel about towers in general. In terms of the specific project, I appreciate the clarity and the information provided in the application, but I do have a few things that I was still unclear on. First of all, in the project narrative on the third page, there's a map. And on the map, it marks both an existing tower and a proposed tower. And I think it's somewhat confusing that the existing tower that's listed is actually the tower in town, whereas the proposed tower is a tower on the ledge. Because from my understanding, that putting this proposed tower up is replacing the tower that's already on the ledge. It has nothing to do with the tower in town. And that kind of leads into my next question, which is that when this was all presented, I think it was 2 months ago in Planning Commission, it was at the same time as the application from FirstNet and ComNet. And what I'm wondering is if things have been legitimately figured out between DW Power and ComNet FirstNet to co-locate at this site, because it seemed really uncertain when I was talking about last time. And there are a number of references in the project narrative that the new tower could hold space for emergency services communication, and Curtis just went over the staff report, which says the same thing. But from listening to that previous meeting, it seemed to me that ComNet and FirstNet had a lot of resistance to relocating their tower to this DW location. So I'm wondering what changed since this meeting, and if the ability for accommodation on one tower has actually been secured. Otherwise, allowing the CUP does nothing to ensure that a new tower won't be built directly next to the school. It would just allow for two towers. So if this hasn't yet been affirmed, I'd like to see this approval wait until confirmation is received. Yeah,
that's what
I would like to say. And
I'm curious if more communication has happened with ComNet and FirstNet about this. Thank you. I think we should respond to that. Curtis, can you weigh in on what you've learned since then?
Basically, I didn't get the ComNet application until last Friday that addressed the new ordinance, and they've asked for a height that goes beyond the 50 feet. They've asked for a different setback, and so there's a variance involved there, so that's something you're going to have to deal with. The baseline on this is that the FCC won't let you deny having, you know, a cell tower. But what our ordinance does is give you some latitude and discretion as to the placement of it. So, if you were to approve this, then the new tower would be approved. mistake, and I was told by the applicant that they would be given the first opportunity. If they don't accept that opportunity, then that's just something you have to deal with in a second application down the road. But it's very difficult, especially with the FCC rules and everything, to make one contingent upon the other. I think you have to take those two separate applications and then exercise your power under the ordinance. And your power is substantial under the ordinance. If you have one tower in a preferred location, then you have considerable leverage in what you do with any additional towers and co-location. So it's really up to you how you want to proceed there. But I think it'd be very difficult to make one contingent upon the other. You just kind of stall the whole thing out.
Okay, thank you. Let's go back to public comments.
Okay, next is Elizabeth. Go ahead.
Hey, I just have a question. If what has happened, if any, communication with the county as far as in the application, it's referenced that it's for first responders, and it obviously has to be a system that the county buys into. And is it something that the entire county is going to be using? Or if it's just the Boulder first responders, is it them keeping them that they don't actually get to participate and use it? And so, again, just what communication has happened with our county, and what buy-in does the county have, if any?
Thank you, Elizabeth. Does anyone have answers to that?
I don't have an answer to that.
So, Elizabeth, I have a question. So,
can I ask something? Sorry, Matt.
So, what is the issue with the county buying in? Like, that would
be
better?
Well, they have to, our first responders have to have equipment that can be used with these towers, and will the county be providing that or not? And I would say that it's important to have this communication with the county because, you know, our fire department is independent, but yet their radios and dispatch is through the county, but our EMTs are through the county and Ray is through the county, and so it has to be a system that the entire Garfield County is using, or we don't have the equipment for the individual volunteer EMTs and fire to use. And I would like more information to make sure that this communication has happened between us moving forward with something, if it's being said that it's supporting first responders, because that is an issue that we have in our county, is that people aren't receiving emergency calls.
Okay, thank you.
I'd like to respond to that. Elizabeth, I'll check into that further. I didn't get to go to the meeting this last month. We had to go into Salt Lake. It was important. And it has been one crazy 3 weeks for me. But that really is an issue that needs to be taken up. However, I don't think it has to do with the tower, the DW tower that we're talking about now. Because if the first responder or if ComNet, no matter what they do, whether they use this tower or whether they decide to keep the other tower for whatever reason, it could be contracts, no matter what, this tower shouldn't have any really thing to do with that. But we definitely need to check into that to find out what the county is doing with that. And I fully intend to do that. I apologize I haven't been able to address it, but tell Troy not to give up, because hopefully next week will be my first free week to be able to do something. And I was hoping I'd get into Panguitch at the December meeting, but I don't think they're going to have one. But I can call and find out, because I would like to also get this taken care of as you would.
I think Judy's right on that. I think you've got to consider this application on its own merits. And,
okay, it looks like Ashley has his hand up.
Really quick, Matt, before Ashley goes, Jeremy Boone was next in line, and then Ashley will be after him. Thanks.
Hi, this is Jeremy Boone. I'm with SAC Wireless. I know I'm part of the applicant for the other location that will be here next month. There was just an item I did want to clarify that was brought up earlier, was that the other tower is ConNet's. I do want to clarify that tower is not ConNet. ConNet is just a tenant on that location. And the tower is not something that ConNet has control of. That is actually owned by South Central at that location. And ConNet does have an existing long-term agreement on that tower. So I just want to ensure that it's aware that while ConNet's name in conversation is coming up, ConNet does have an agreement to be on that existing tower that is owned by South Central. And I just wanted to ensure that there's not the understanding that I'm not coming out and against this application. I do believe that DW Towers, with the need for their microwave, is definitely encouraged. I believe they've explained their need for it at this location, but looping in ComNet with the understanding that this additional tower, the other tower in town, is going to come down. I just want to ensure it's not seen that way, because that tower does exist. It is South Central's tower. That tower will, whether this is approved or denied, that tower still will exist. And ComNet is just a long-term tenant on that tower, along with additional carriers. I just wanted to clarify that for everyone here. Additionally, I do know that my talks, since I am partnering with ComNet on many sites throughout the state of Utah, FirstNet is supported by Garfield County. I know in our past conversations, we have had their support based on other locations. But I also believe that there is a separation between the needs for this tower and looping in what our application is being presented, or what we have filed back in September in regards to what we want. So I just want to ensure and kind of clarify the line between, because I feel that there's a little bit of melding coming in here. But I just wanted to take that time, so thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Okay, go ahead, Ashley. Remember to unmute yourself.
Okay, so about a week or two ago, when I seen the notice for this meeting, why it was talking about the cell phone tower on Thompson Ledge, and I wrote an email to both Curtis and to Hank saying that it was not a cell phone tower and that it was a tower used for over-the-air TV, and also I'm also concerned about the cell phone tower and TV tower being used in combination, like having both interact each other on the same tower, because that would jeopardize the TV stations, because I keep in touch with the TV translators that take care of the TV, and they're telling me that having them both on the same tower would jeopardize the TV, and I think that the TV tower should probably stay as it is, that nothing should be messed with it. You know, it's only been in for probably about 12 years, and when we changed over to digital TV from analog TV. And so if there has to be another tower on Thompson Ledge for cell phone coverage, that one should be put probably right next to it, or in a different spot. But I do support having cell phone tower on Thompson Ledge. So anyway, basically, I'm just supporting, the thing that the TV translator people have been telling me, they do the TV translators throughout central and southern Utah, and they usually have me checked, you know, like if the TV station goes out, they have me check it on my TV to see whether it goes out, whether it needs to be fixed from their spot, or sometimes I even have to go up on Thompson Ledge to fix the channel if it's out on the side up on Thompson Ledge. So anyway, that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Ashley.
Matt, this is Curtis. I just got this morning, and this is a study that the DW Tower, they listened to Ashley's concerns, and they responded with an engineering firm, Global RF Solutions, and they addressed that question, and I was on a conference call with them today, and they said this study, and they've given me verbal assurances that the cell tower antennas would not interfere with the TV antennas. The TV antennas are a very large wattage, and the TV antenna, the over-ear TV antennas, won't interfere with the cell. So they're two separate kind of waves. One's a radio wave, I guess one's a UHF wave, but those are very low wattage TV, and they don't broadcast, they only receive. So the best information I have as of this morning is to address Ashley and others' concerns, is it won't diminish their coverage, the reception they're currently getting in town, to share a tower with some TV, with FirstNet and I'm not saying, speaking for FirstNet ComNet, but I'm saying if they were up there, their antennas, T-Mobile, AT&T, whoever went up there, Verizon, they would not interfere with these TV broadcast antennas.
Okay, thank you for that information. Any other public comments?
I don't see any hands raised.
Yes, I have a comment from Anselm. This is Peg. I had a conversation with him, and he sent me an abbreviated thing he'd like me to read. It's very short. Do tell the Planning Commission that you got a document for me that I opposed the cell tower for many reasons, which you don't mention in detail, but I will provide if so wished, and that, which is essential, I do not give permission to use my road to put up the tower unless I am provided with profound and scientific research that there is no health threats of any kind to anybody exposed to the radiated waves from the tower. I think the Planning Commission needs to know that my road cannot be used for any such purposes.
Thank you.
If there's anybody else that wants to talk, maybe turn your, if you don't know how to raise your hand on Zoom, you can turn your camera on or just turn your mute off and chime in at this point.
I'll just say one thing, Matt, very briefly. The road that Anselm refers to as his road is actually his and the Petersons' road. The Petersons have a full right of access to their property, and they've entered into a lease agreement. And DW Tower has had a title company research it and ensure the access for the leasehold. So that's where that stands.
So legally speaking, there's documentation on that?
Yeah, so I'll let DW Tower answer that when you get into your meeting or whenever they want to chime in, but they've consulted with their attorneys and the title company, and they have insured access. There was a lawsuit 20 years ago where Anselm tried to bar the access to the north end, and he lost that lawsuit, and the judgment was pretty clear that Petersons had goes.
Yeah, and this is Dale Wilson. I can chime in and say that, yes, we hired a tile company to confirm access, and we're very comfortable in working with Ron as well. We're very comfortable that there, we have legal access to the motion.
Okay, thank you. Last chance for public comments.
Still no hands raised, Matt.
Okay, would someone like to make a motion to close the public hearing and open the regular meeting?
I make a motion to close the public hearing and open the regular meeting.
I'll second that, Mrs. Cookie.
Okay, all in favor, Matt Cock and I.
Haley Apperson, aye.
Cookie Shouse, aye.
Josie Mews, aye.
Okay, thank you, everybody. So, now it's discussion time. I want to say a few things. So, to frame it first, it seems as if the legality of the road is covered. Question that was brought up, and the questions I have are that were brought up by the public as well are health concerns. I don't know if we have any data on that, and I think that it's an interesting decision because we're being pulled between two conflicting interests in the cell tower companies, actually. And so we need to sort of tease that apart. So given that and given the conditions from the staff report, I'm curious to know from the commissioners if there are extra conditions you see, if those conditions are all right with you, whatever concerns or any thoughts you have, let's put it on the table.
This is Cookie Shouse, and I just would like to say I really have no, first of all, I have no, I have done no research about the medical part of it and, the, you know, what kind of health things with the bees and the insects and all that. I am absolutely clueless along those lines. But I will say that DW has been so forthcoming, and really it seems like they've gone down the list of our requirements and have given them considerable thought. And I like the fact that they're willing to and have the capability of sharing their tower with other businesses and seem open to do that. So I really have no problem with giving an approval to this. Sticking my neck out here, but and for the first responders too, that question, it seems like it is something that has to be looked at individually. I'm sure they could hang something on that tower on Thompson Ridge that would do the trick. I think Judy had done some research that showed it's more a matter of getting a microchip. And I don't know whether that connects with Garfield County or not, but I thank Judy for following up on that and ahead of time, and that's my comment.
Thank you. Haley or Josie, comments?
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to the conditions. I think that conditions are well written and mitigate any concerns that I would have at the tower. So I have nothing to add.
Thank you.
I'm in the same boat.
All right. And so, yeah, my comments are the conditions seem reasonable to me. You know, I think I want to address the issue of that the South Central Tower application, the other site, we're going to discuss that in a few minutes after this. But that's a separate issue. What seems reasonable about this tower is, yes, the due diligence and the capability of putting the possibility of putting these other services up there seems important. And that, you know, I think the best would be, again, one tower with the services on there and away from the school and the church seems important. I think it leaves options for these cell companies to negotiate whatever contracts they need to negotiate to hang their equipment on that sort of stuff. And I think, and I am supposing that the first responder stuff can be worked out in accordance with these options in the best way. And I think that's where I'm at with it. So I agree with the conditions on there. I don't have anything to add. So I'd like to bring it to a vote. So I'll make a motion to approve the conditional use permit for the DW Tower on Thompson Ledge.
Could I ask, Matt, that you include in your motion that you approve the application as written together with the staff report and the conditions shown therein?
Okay, so I'll make a motion to approve the DW Tower CUP as written in the staff report with conditions applicable. Did I do that right?
Yeah.
Someone want to second that?
I'll second that. This is Cookie.
Okay, all in favor? Matt Cochran, aye.
Haley Appleton, aye.
Cookie Stouse, aye.
Josie Mews, aye.
Thank you. Okay, onward. Let's see, where are we? So, from there, we're moving on to the staff report from the zoning administrator. We'll start with, let's segue into the update on the ComNet application, which is the South Central Tower. And talking about the possible variance from our ordinance on that. So that's you, Curtis.
Okay. I received the application on approximately September the 12th. I wrote to SAC, who had been handling the application, on September 30th, and I said, here's our new ordinance. We talked a little before. I'd send it to them. They said, send us a signed copy. So I complied with that, and then I wrote them a letter. I said, there are several areas in here that you have not addressed. You need to rewrite your application and incorporate the provisions of the new ordinance. I didn't get that rewritten application until last Friday, so it was too late to put them on for a public hearing. When I reviewed that, when I got last Friday and reviewed it, I found two things in there that are out of compliance with our new ordinance that was passed on September 3rd of this year. The two things are the height limitation. There's a 50-foot height limitation. When you don't already have a non-conforming use, their current tower. The south central current tower is between 30 and 35 feet. I'm not exactly sure. So there's no grandfathering. temporary or non-conforming or non-complying structure there. So to go from to 55 feet, then SAC was said just process our application as is. So my question to you is, they want a variance for 5 feet over the height limitation. They want a 55-foot monopole. There's also some new side yard setbacks. I think they're okay on the front yard setback, but on the side yard setback, they're not. And I sent you their application, and they addressed that, and they said, we think it's okay. We think planning told us something about planning told us it was okay, but I think they misunderstood. That would have been prior to September 3rd, because I've been having conversations with SAC going back a year and a half. And so it would have been okay, the side yard, earlier. The height would have been okay, but after September 3rd, those things were no longer okay. So typically, where they want to stay with their application as written, the question for you is, do you want to go ahead in January? Do you want us to schedule a public hearing and go ahead with that? Or do you want to have them first clear up the variance question? I consulted with Lee Ellis on this, and in my own prior experience, basically, planning commissions would first address the variance question and send them to the Board of Adjustments to get that cleared up to, yes, you can have a variance of that 5 feet, yes, you can stay with your side yard, or no, you can't. And then if it was a no, then they would rewrite their application and come back to you. So I think that's the accepted procedure before you schedule a public hearing, because then you might look at the ordinance and say, well, no, we just have to send them back to the Board of Adjustments. So that would be pretty redundant. And I think fairness to them, too, would want to kind of keep this moving. So I'm just throwing that out to you. That's your decision, how you want to proceed.
Okay, so in my understanding, then, in the application, there are two variances or where it doesn't fit with the ordinance. One is in the height of the tower, and the second is in the setbacks on the sides. I forget what that actual language was, but... it has to be like, 1.5 times higher or farther in distance than the height of the tower, is that correct?
And that's to protect neighboring property owners and structures.
Okay, so those two don't actually fit into our ordinances. So you're suggesting that we should send them to the Board of Adjustments, which deals with variances first.
Correct.
Okay. Any comments on that from the Planning Commission?
Just that I agree. I think it should go to the Board of Adjustments, so we don't have to repeat a public hearing if we change things.
Yeah, I agree as well.
I think I agree with that too, and I also think there are, it seems to me, other things that they are not in compliance with that maybe could be looked at by the Board of Adjustments. Gosh, I hate to say it, but I don't even know who's on the Board of Adjustments other than Mark Nelson. And do we have a full group? Or
Tina and Jade.
Cookie, what other issues are out of compliance that you see?
Well, for one thing, it's 1.5 times the height of a tower to a road, public or private, but it's 2.5 times to a property line. So I don't see how that could ever work. There's also, I don't know whether, I haven't seen attached to their application, or whether this comes later, that they'll have that $10,000 security funding secured for the town in case they take it down. Maybe that's with South Central, I don't know. Also, yeah, just the tower not being over 50 feet tall. And I don't see any evidence of them exhausting all reasonable options. I think I saw a 20-foot circle around where they are now that they look for options. And that seems a little bit, I don't understand that. So
let me just clear that up for you a little bit, Cookie. When something is like a requirement in the ordinance that they look to co-locate or they examine all of the options in town or they post a bond, those are things that you would deal with in a conditional use application hearing. So you would deal with all of that. But when you have something that's a cut and dried pipe, for example, or a cut and dried side yard, and that has to, then that's a clearly a variance that they would need before you could begin to deal with those other elements of the ordinance.
So, oh, okay. So,
yeah,
so
part of it is on you guys, and part of it would be on the Board of Adjustments. We would
So what the Board of Adjustments decides doesn't necessarily make planning go in a certain direction with it.
No, it just answers specific questions for you.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Peg, do we need to vote to send this to the Board of Adjustments?
No, I guess my only question, Curtis, I think you may have answered it before. Typically, there's an application to go to the Board of Adjustment. Does the paperwork that they've already submitted constitute that application?
Well, actually, Matt, I do think it'd be appropriate that if you want them to go to the Board of Adjustments first, I think it'd be appropriate to do that by resolution based upon the application that you have seen. You pass a resolution that they go seek a variance where appropriate first.
So I would propose a resolution asking ComNet to seek a variance with the Board of Adjustments. That's the resolution I'm trying to make here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I suppose I can make a motion to do that. So I'm making a motion to get ComNet to seek a variance with the Board of Adjustments before going to the Planning Commission.
I'll second
that.
Oops.
All
I'll second
favor.
That. This is
Cookie.
Yeah.
All in favor, Matt Cochran, aye.
Kaylee Atkinson, aye.
Cookie Shouse, aye.
Okay, sorry for the clumsy wording on that.
That's okay. Can I just clarify, Curtis? Does this mean they do or do not need to fill out a separate application?
No, they do. This is just as to whether or not we schedule a public hearing or first we go through the Board of Adjustments. I just want it clearly in the record. The Planning Commission had decided first they needed to go to the Board of Adjustments and then they do need to fill out an application, and I will contact their contact at SAC and get that rolling tomorrow.
Okay, okay, I'll cover the rest offline. Okay, thank you.
Well, I can put you in contact with her too, Peg.
Really quickly, Jeremy, did you have another question for the council, for the Planning Commission?
No, I just wanted to clarify the application did request the relief that are being discussed for the variance, and it was part of our application here. And additionally, I know the one reason we were initially kicked back was the one comment especially was about finding a different option that was presented to us as the other tower that has yet to have been approved, which did initially we were told prevented us from going forward on the location. So that's just something I want to indicate here, that these reliefs were being requested and have been requested. And additionally, our September application, the one item that was really clarified was that without finding, we had to prove how we could co-locate on another tower, and the tower being presented to us to add to our application was not a tower that existed at the time of the application.
Right, exactly.
right, then, thank you. Let's wrap that up, unless there's last chance. And let's see, one more thing in the staff report is, let's see, we're updating the Smalley conditional use permit for the Arts Ag Center. We had a condition, number 5, when it was passed, that final plans and specification, when completed and prior to a project permit, building permit being issued, shall be submitted for review at the PC meeting to assure compatibility with the application as presented on 6/11/20. So that's what's happening now, as I understand, and we're going to hear from the architect. I wonder if either Curtis or Peg, you could share on the screen those the conditions from that document, from that staff report.
Okay.
That's what the commissioner members should be looking at to make sure they've all been addressed.
Exactly.
Curtis, do you have that? Or?
I believe they're going to take over the screen and want to make a presentation to you. And I believe they have each condition outlined in their drawings and so forth. So they were going to go, they've shown them to me, and they were going to show them to you both in drawing form and verbiage, how they're addressing each condition.
Okay,
so
great.
That's satisfactory. They could come on and go forward with that now.
Okay, and who are we, who is presenting here?
Hi, Ed Stewart here. Yes. I'm with Treo Architects, my partner Matt Brown. Good to be on the call. And on it, snow, our landscape. Did you catch that? My internet connection's flopping around a little.
Yes.
We froze a little bit, but we got the gist of it.
Ed, do you have the documents to share? Or do you want us to share them?
If you could share them, that would be great.
Okay. What do you want to look at first? The photographs of the...
Why don't we look at the cover page, A1.0.
Okay. Curtis, do you have that?
Yeah, I do. Let me pull it up because I've got it in the correct order that Matt just revised for me today. Okay, let me get off of this room. And get over to this room.
Permitted We have 30-foot, 30-foot, and 10-foot, and we're proposing 72-foot, 58-foot, and 370-foot. You permitted 30-foot in height or 2.5 stories, and our building is 2 stories, and we intend to stay underneath the maximum height. As far as lot coverage goes, we're permitted 0.2 and we're at 0.01. I think if there's anything else, nothing else on this page, we could go to the next page. LD 1.0. Lighting plan is a little further along.
Want me to go to the next sheet, Ed?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
That's a grading plan showing pretty much all of our grading information. And we've got a septic system planned in front of the old barn on that sort of gentle slope there, but by and large, on the rest of the property, we tried to keep the grading as natural as possible.
I don't know if anybody else has seen this. Corla put in the chat to everyone, she's asking about RV parking and turnaround.
Huh.
Can you expand on that a little? Or do we want to save that till after Ed's finished presenting?
I just looked at the narrative there on his parking spaces and realized that you were talking at the Buddhist thing about RV parking. And if people pull off the highway in RVs, if they need a place to turn around and park. So that was in part of the ordinances. So that was, I just didn't see it here.
We've not addressed it specifically. Well,
yeah, we have to be good. We're just addressing the conditions that were opposed under the existing ordinance, not the new ordinances under discussion with Lane Ellis that have not been passed yet.
Thank you.
Chris, if you could go to the next page, please.
Grading or lighting?
sort of the minimal required to provide for safety. We weren't planning on any floodlights outside or lighting up the structure or anything like that. I think we can go to the next page. This is our planting plan, and I think I'll hand the mic over to Annika to speak about the plants she's chosen.
For the shade trees, we have them encircling to the east and the south around the theater. And then I've gone with all low water use for both evergreens and deciduous specimen. Everything was double checked to make sure that the specimen would work at the elevation that is this specific site. And the deciduous trees will be fast growing and evergreen as usual. Will be more slow-growing species. The material will be a minimum of 2-inch caliper going in regarding the deciduous trees, and the evergreens will be a minimum of 6 feet tall to start, all the way up to 10 feet tall to make them substantial upon planting, and so that you don't have to wait too long for that screening and privacy from highway 12. There will be some more ornate planting, but still low water use and still native to the area up close to the education center itself. But we're not going to make that a widespread application just so that there isn't a huge water output for this property.
And thanks, Annika. And then as far as maintenance goes, Jackie had indicated that she would like to hire a local person or company to maintain the place, and that she and Andy would be overseeing that and using their irrigation water to feed everything until it gets done. I think we're on the next page, Curtis. These are floor plans that haven't changed much since the original application. We did sort of design out the ground floor more. It wasn't very well sussed out back when the permit was applied for. We are addressing conditions 2A, which is some detailed architectural and engineering with material list and colors, and that the materials and colors are on the next page for this. They're on page A3.1. Basically, we're trying to match the red color of the existing barn, and the roof will be this corrugated metal galvanized, and there'll be some concrete or concrete blocks going at the lower level. Kind of a pretty simple palette. There's sliding doors that we'll talk about soon that are just sort of brown wood doors. We could go back to A2.0, please. Up one more. There we go. We're also meeting condition 2D, which I just discussed, the plan for the basement level. There's a small kind of warming kitchen and a pottery lab and an art studio that's as yet not very well defined. We've got a bathroom down there that's got more stalls than are required, so that'll probably be reduced once we're finished with design and code research. We've also got 2G. Events and gatherings outside that require lighting are not authorized. Quiet use for small gatherings are allowed. I think we've pretty much got that covered. We've set up the building so the sides that are visible from the road are really, we've got barn doors that close to screen those at night from the road. And Curtis is showing you our dark sky plan. There's a glass entry that faces north that can't be seen from the road. It really, and it's blocked from the lake property by the red barn, so it's really just sort of really only seen once you climb up to the building. At night, when the performances, we'll want to close that south side in any case, so we've got sliding doors that'll block the light for evening performances. During the day, we were thinking there might be poetry or music recitals that could happen in front of those windows. And then, I guess on the long elevations, we've also got barn doors. So there's just essentially those two pair of triple doors on the lower level that aren't covered. So I think we've kept light still to an absolute minimum. Okay, we've just about covered it, unless anyone has questions for me.
Did you cover, let's see, 2B, interior plans for sound system, sound levels, control measures for noise trespass?
I guess the way it works out is that to get the sound to work properly in the theater, we're going to have a pretty high sound transmission index. I think it'll be as quiet as a, sort of a luxury townhome between the two units. But we haven't specifically yet designed those walls, but they will have, in addition to the siding and insulation, there will be a system to keep the sound inside the building.
Yeah, these are a townhouse in an urban area compared to Boulder next to each other is a way different thing. So,
sure, but
and Matt also told me that going back to the barn doors, mm-hmm. that when you close these barn doors, that's where the sound can come out. So both on the south. So by closing those barn doors, you've got another sound barrier there in addition to what's inside. So that's part of meeting the sound condition. The barn door is not only the lighting condition, but the sound condition.
OK, Okay, and according to that condition, it's important, especially that in sound systems, when you have subwoofer or bass noises, those sound waves travel. They run at long waves and they travel through and out things pretty. So that really needs to be addressed. There have been issues in town with it already.
We've got a lighting designer on board, and I'm working on getting a sound designer, and we intend to address those issues.
Great. Let's see, any other, is that it then? I think that's, I'm looking at the, yeah. So any questions from the commissioners, comments on the update? I'll take that as a no. Okay, thank you. Is there anything else on this, Curtis, or are we done?
No, I think we're done. This satisfies the condition, and as to sound, or as to, if any condition number six is if they violate any of these conditions, then you can schedule a hearing on it and take appropriate action. So and they're aware of that. So I think I looked it over pretty carefully, and it appeared to me they have met, addressed each of the conditions.
Okay. And or will address. Is that information was here.
Yeah. And that's an ongoing process under a condition use permit. So like sound, that's an ongoing thing. So if there are violations, then they'll need to they'll call our attention to it and it'll need to be addressed.
Great. All right, then, we're almost there. So moving on from there, thank you. I think it was Ed and Matt. Now, let's see, Michela, do you have an update on the RSTR property mapping project?
I do. Let me go ahead and share my screen now. When we last looked, I've had a number of column B that still needed to be filled in, and some questions about what zone, so also column D. I think I've nailed most of those down. I haven't carried it through into the three separate pages for each section of folder, just in the main page that's all zones. You will see, still, here's one that's a question. It's mostly just about whether that's their primary residence. These are all locals that I've put that on. So they're folks that have a number of properties or, two or more lots in town. Let's see. I did move, just because I was looking at the parcel number so frequently, I haven't, and I haven't shared this yet via Dropbox. I wanted to verify that we were moving in a direction, or if there was somewhere else that you wanted, another direction you wanted me to take this. Do you want me to total it somehow? I haven't done that yet.
Yeah, I'm thinking out loud, but I'm thinking,
sure.
the use of it, of course, is to, define sort of the amount of residences in each section, and then sort of to proceed from there to see if, it was more or less fair or equitable. And how
right.
We divide those three sections, so that if you feel like we're close to that, that would be helpful information. Although I also realize we're not under the gun; these were not getting any applications for RSTRs at the moment. So.
Correct. And I would say that I know how many are currently holding. I would say Lower Boulder is the area that if anybody is interested, those are going rapidly. But I mean, the next step obviously is, yeah, I can total it out and give you some idea. Between the two mapping programs I'm using, which is a parcel, you know, one is a Utah State one, and then the other one is a hunting and off-road site called Onyx. I noticed on I can't remember what it's called, parcels.utah.gov or something like that. I think they update annually. It's probably based on, I don't know if it's just the end of the year or that's when property taxes are due. They're even just going through it again, fine detailing the last few weeks. I've noticed that some of the properties are not up to date in terms of, because I know personally that they've sold. So maybe what we want to do is just run through this one more time. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
give me some feedback. Yeah. Direction.
I'll leave that. I want to leave that to your discretion. I think I understand that it's one of those jobs that keeps getting bigger, it seems like, as you go. And that property ownership and so on and primary residences, especially now, are constantly changing. So it's something that's going to be needing to be updated. We have to figure that out on a certain level. But it'd be good just to have some numbers now so we could define our boundaries in a fair way. So I think, in my mind, that's the next step. I don't know if the commissioners feel differently about that. So any comments on that from others?
I would chip in on that, Matt, just to say that, for example, in Lower Boulder, in that region, we have two authorized RSTRs, and I don't know when we hit 15%. Is that a three? I mean, if I were to get an application tomorrow, I would have to assume that, you know, we're starting to bump up against it. So is the number three? Is it four? What is it? How many primary residences are there down there under the ordinance? So, you know,
exactly. And actually, and now that I'm thinking about it too, Michaela, is like, we were looking for the number on the date that ordinance passed, which I think was June 2019.
Okay.
You know, that was sort of our launching point.
Number in each section, June 2019.
Yeah, but you know, I think it's probably impossible to get to every single particular, but I think if we're close, then we can base it off that. I would consider that fair and equitable, at least.
Fair, and I think we'll be close enough that if there's some question that, you know, if somebody applies at some point and we're full in that section, then maybe we can reevaluate.
Great, yeah.
I don't know if that's a good guideline, or, I mean, I don't want to seem unfair in any way, but also how do we, you know, other than word of mouth and or checking on it weekly or something, how am I to know when properties have sold and when somebody's now a primary resident versus a secondary
right
place?
And like I said, you know, when we made the ordinance, it was specifically stated that those numbers and that percentage was reliant on when that ordinance passed.
Okay. All right, I'll get these totals done, and then I'll share it in Dropbox with all the commission members, and most likely I'll forward that on to the council as well.
And, yeah, thank you for all your work. I think it's valuable information beyond this, so hopefully, you know, it's going to be a resource for us for other things in the future, too.
Oh, absolutely. Agreed.
So, thank you. Okay.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Okay, so upcoming business for January 14th. Let's see, Peg. We have a public hearing for. Do we have a public hearing for ComNet now?
Yes. No. Well, no.
That's
well,
be the Board of Adjustment.
Yeah. Let me ask you this: let's just assume we don't know yet what the Board of Adjustment schedule is going to be, but if they did happen to have a meeting in December and resolved it, it's possible your next meeting in January is the 14th. So it's possible that a public hearing could be scheduled, as long as I can get that 10-day notice into the newspaper in time to get printed. It's possible. So
it's possible.
Do you want to consider it then, if it is possible? Given that you'll have a public hearing on the other matter of Lee Nellis.
Let's stick with one. I mean, I'd prefer to stick with one public hearing. That's going to be a big one because it's going to take a while to get through with Lee's discussion. And given, I mean, I suppose we should keep it open in case they get their stuff together and the Board of Adjustment does, but it's hard to imagine with the holiday season coming up and all that and being 10 days out in advance in my mind. So
okay.
I'm saying yes, but I'm thinking more like February.
Okay.
I also think that judging from Jeremy's comment there that now that the tower is approved up on Thompson Branch, that might change the conversation. That might change ComNet's direction.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I think we got a lot of wait and sees here, but we'll take first things first will be the variance. I'll just write to him and say, how do you want to proceed on the variance in there?
Okay, so the known that we have for January right now is the public hearing on the development, the commercial development standards. We'll have Michaela's, we'll have the RSTR numbers and discussion. Anything else, anyone? And I guess the regular things. Whatever those are.
Minutes approval and staff reports and public comments.
Right. Okay. Good. So now we're getting close here, but I want to, will someone make a motion to close our meeting and open this up for public, final public comments?
Don't close the meeting yet. Leave that on the record.
Okay. I'll leave the meeting open and let's just make a motion to open for public comments. Leap in.
Was that your motion and I second it, or are you asking for a motion?
I'm asking for a motion.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. I'm Josie Mews. I make a motion to open to public comments.
You don't really need to do that. It's just part of your regular agenda.
Oh.
This is not a... The public hearing is an official separate deal, but this is just part of your regular agenda. So.
Okay. The mic is open for public comments. Anyone have comments, please raise your hand virtually or turn your video on and Michaela will call you.
I don't see anybody. Michaela, do you see anybody waving or signaling otherwise?
I don't have any hands raised.
Okay.
Our participants have decreased significantly, so I think everyone's leaving.
We're doing a 5-second countdown. This is your last chance for public comments. 4, 3, 2. Who's that?
Tina, is that you?
Yeah.
Sounds scary.
Excuse me. Am I on?
Yes.
You're on.
Sorry. Okay. Can you just define exactly what the... Board of Adjustments is required to do based on decision of the Planning Commission?
We can, Tina, we can talk about that. We can talk about that offline, I think. It's the height restriction of the tower and the setbacks, but the details, we'll get that offline. It's not based on any decision that the Planning Commission has made. It's something that Board of Adjustment has to settle the variances first.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments? Okay, does the commissioner want to make a motion to close the meeting?
I'll make a motion to close the meeting. This is Haley Appleton.
Second?
I second the motion. Dosey News.
All in favor? Matt Cochran, aye.
Haley Appleton, aye.
Cookie
Shouse, aye. Josie
Muse, aye. Okay, thank you everybody for hanging in there.
Okay.
Matt, thank you so much for whizzing through the meeting. You did a great job.
Yeah, 2.5 hours, not too bad, eh?
You are amazing. Amazing.
Thanks, you guys. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah.
Thanks, Matt.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Do you want me to hang on, Peg, and we can go over the list when you stop?
Yeah. Yeah, I think a few slipped in during the middle when I was taking notes.
I tried to get them all, but yeah. At one point we had like 31 participants.
Wow. Do you want me to read through my list or you read through yours?
Sure, go for it.
Okay. Michael Fraser. Unfortunately, I don't know what he was on for, but anyway, Michael Fraser, Lee Nellis, Rod Peterson, you and Matt and Judy Drain and Steve Cox, Cookie, Elizabeth Julian with Toby and Connor McFadden, Josie, Nancy Tosta, Mark Nelson, Corley Quinta, Curtis, Ashley, Haley, Jackie, Tessa, Polly Patrick, Carolyn and Tom Hoyt, Tina Carlson, Phoenix, Judith Guile, Chris Donnelly, Jeremy Boone, Cynthia Vandermark, Dale Wilson, Ken Jacobs, Kip Green, Deborah Oldham, and then Ed Schur, and Nasia Snow-Vallon.
Yeah.
And that is all I have written down.
Did you say Matthew Brown already?
No. Matthew Brown. Sorry. Who's Matthew Brown?
I think he was with Ed.
Oh, okay.
He got on quite late, so I think he was with the Nasia, and I'm not sure, though.
Okay.
And did you say Ken Jacobs?
Yes.
Okay, and you got Kip Green.
Yep.
There were two phone numbers that I didn't get a chance to ask before they exited, so if you want them, I'll give them to you, and you can just put them in.
Okay. Do you do that? Put in phone numbers? I mean, I haven't.
You could just put two unidentified phone numbers.
That's what I'll do.
But you don't need to put their, actually publish their numbers. I think that's fine.
Yeah.
That's it. Our lists match.
Good. That wasn't bad. Okay.
Yeah. Those were the only ones I didn't, that you got, or you didn't get that I got, was Matthew Brown. So you were on it.
I guess I was, yeah. That was so helpful to have you, though. Thank you so much for doing that. At first, I thought I was going to be doing all the documents and then at the last minute, Curtis emailed and said, no, he'll do all of his. So that was like, oh, yes.
That's helpful.
Yeah, yeah, it was.
Sure.
Yes.
Do you want to hit pause?
Yeah, I guess that's a good idea. You know, at some point I noticed, I don't know where, it had paused. I don't know if when I was fumbling with the share screen I hit stop or what, but at some point the recording did pause, but I do have my little handheld guy going, so
I noticed that it was paused during the Lee Nellis meeting portion,
really?
But I thought maybe that was on purpose. And, you know, Elizabeth even texted me about it.
Oh, no, I thought I...
She was only concerned because her internet, poor thing, I think she cut out like, I don't even know how many times, but she texted me at least 6 times tonight.
Oh, really? Of just
losing...
Oh, dear.
Yeah, she said she thinks it's because it's only on planning commission because she and Matt are both right there.
Oh.
Trying to pull.
Oh.
So I don't know what it is, but, you know.
Interesting. Well, yeah, that's when I was doing a lot of screen share stuff, and that the control is right next to it, so it's very likely. I know I started it at the beginning of the meeting, but somewhere I must have hit pause, so... Probably mostly through the Lee Nellis stuff. But I do have that on the other recorder, so I'm not too worried.
Okay.
All
right.
Thank you.
Well, that's all I have. Yeah, okay, thanks.
Okay.
Have a great night.
Yeah. And, yeah, I'll just see you on next Tuesday for sure.
If not before then, I'll see you Tuesday.
Okay, see ya. Thanks.
Okay. Good night.
Night.